This is Toronto Today with Greg Brady.
Toronto's news, today's talk.
640 Toronto.
Yesterday was the first of what's probably going to be a few days of an appeal process. They're reduced sentence appeals. They're not actually appealing the conviction themselves. That has come and gone. But Dylan Millard and Mark Smith, two notorious murderers, convicted murderers in Canada, are appealing to get sentences reduced for these multiple murder convictions. They'd like to get 50 years off one sentence, 25 years off another. Millard's been convicted of killing three people, including his father, which was ruled a suicide at first. He's gotten 75 years. 25 years is the max you can get for a murder in Canada. But what happened last spring, like spring of 22, I'll get to in a sec, it's changed the whole landscape of parole hearings and appeals. And I'll explain why that is in a minute or two as well. So, look, it's terrible that these families, Linda Babcock, her daughter Laura, was murdered by, at minimum, Dylan Millard, maybe both Millard and Smith. And she has to get up, refocus on the worst moments, the worst realizations, the worst memories of her life, adult or otherwise, and has to go to court and give and basically wait this out. And she knows what the eventual outcome is going to be. So these Ontario Appeal Court justices are going to likely hear the appeals of Millard and Smith of their convictions for murdering Laura Babcock and Tim Bosma. And here's what will happen. They will be handed more concurrent 25-year periods of parole eligibility. So instead of Millard 75 years, you're not going to be parole eligible until then. And by the way, also, let's do the math. You'll be dead by then, so none of us have to worry about this. And Smith will get 50 years. But last year in April, the Supreme Court of Canada decided, and this case was brought by the Quebec City mosque murderer, Alexandre Bissonnette, that stacked terms are cruel and unusual punishment. Look, it's sometimes said how you judge a society is how you treat its prisoners, how you treat people that are incarcerated. In Canada's case, how do we treat victims of the people that are going to prison for the victimization? That's how I'm judging Canada sometimes. And that's what I find to be cruel and unusual. I've never understood it. I never will. And I want to believe that it will change. I want to believe at some point in time it's on the ballot. It's an election issue. It's bipartisan. And people say, look, there's obviously crimes where we're incarcerating people too often. Obviously, there's crimes that we think we can teach you to be better and rehabilitate you for. And then there's Millard and Smith. And then there's the Bernardos. And then there's the Manassians. And then there's the Bissonnettes. A lot of notorious names from recent past. But I absolutely, absolutely can't get behind this. And you drag people out who absolutely want to have been, it's been so difficult for them to recover. It's been so difficult for them to get better. Here's audio from Tim Bosma's wife from the trial where Millard and Smith were convicted of killing Tim Bosma. Remember, this was about a car purchase on, I think it was Craigslist at the time. I don't think it was Kijiji. I think it was Craigslist. And Tim Bosma went out for a ride and never came back.
For 3 years, we have been in and out of this courthouse, forced to look at and breathe in the same space with the utter depths of depravity in our society.
That's from the Fifth Estate Report. Bob McCown put that together a couple years ago. The quote from Dostoevsky is, "The degree of civilization in a society can be judged by entering its prisons." Okay, give you that. I think there's a degree in which you can measure that. But I want to measure the society by how you judge people who are victimized by those going into prison in the long term. And we have to change that. We have to change that. You might say, come on, this will never happen. This can't transpire. There's no way they would ever get parole. Paul Bernardo wouldn't get parole. I got you. So why go through the exercise? The point isn't whether they'll be granted parole. It shouldn't get to the point where a hearing creates such stress. Almost every other Western democracy has figured out some crimes are worthy of a life sentence. No parole. Just that simple. No parole. What you've done is worthy of a life sentence. And again, I don't know how this ever transpires into a right-left issue. There are issues of crime and punishment and sentencing and incarceration that I understand end up getting divided politically. You might say, well, if you do this, you should never see the light of day again. And someone else might say, I disagree. I think we can teach you to be better. I do think you can teach people to not assault people. I do think you can teach people not to hit people. I'm a believer, and some people, it rankles some people, to say you can teach a man not to hit a woman, not to hit a child. And that does not mean, and a woman hit a man, that does not mean there shouldn't be a sentence for a crime. That doesn't mean that. But there is that element of rehabilitation in the process of that sentencing. These guys, no such luck. Don't care. Throw away the key. That's that. Don't treat them cruelly or unusually in prison itself, but make sure they don't walk the streets. It's that simple. Anne Brocklehurst wrote a book called Dark Ambition. She wrote it about Millard and Bosma. She notes when Millard was defending himself in court, it was quite obvious this was a person beyond saving.
Well, his first cross-examination, which was of Laura's father, Clayton Babcock, was just shocking. There were times he was asking the father questions so personal about Laura's mental health and what kind of father he was that, you know, people in the courtroom gasped or were just generally appalled. And you thought, this man, Dellen Millard, doesn't realize how off these questions are. It's like he's a psychopath, so he doesn't understand that a normal person wouldn't do this.
And that's a theory, but it's possible he does understand, and that's even more frightening. Look, the concept is about justice. Give them a chance to apply for release. But if it's just such a non sequitur, why are we bothering? And aren't there crimes that you shouldn't get that opportunity for? And I'd argue mass murder is one of them. This isn't one killing. And one killing, I still am not sure that you'd end up doing that. So who's the life sentence for? Feels like it's for the families of the dead, knowing they've got to go to parole hearings on a semi-regular basis. I think Paul Bernardo's had 4 parole hearings. If not, he's had 3 just in the last several years. Why? What are we doing? Why are we making those people get up, put a suit on, go to a parole hearing? Fingers crossed, almost certainly there won't be a result that's in favor of a Bernardo type. But look, legal systems have to be civilized. Check. Got it. Merciful and dignified. But who's the dignity for? The victim or the victimizer? Where's the mercy? Is it for the victim or the victimizer? I think we've got to stop ignoring the victims and their grieving relatives and stop playing things into the balance of the perpetrator of the crimes. They've been convicted of the crimes. Now it's time to do the sentence.
This is Toronto Today with Greg Brady.
Toronto's news, today's talk.
640 Toronto.
It's massive news for the town of St. Thomas, just outside of London, Ontario. I think it's huge news for all of Ontario. And we know we've had sort of stop start with regard to electric vehicles. We're not buying them in Ontario in the same percentage that they are in Quebec, not buying them in the same percentage as British Columbia. Some of that is a lack of provincial incentives. No doubt an announcement like yesterday that Volkswagen's going to put a battery plant in St. Thomas is great news and is going to push us in that direction. We're pleased to welcome on the mayor of St. Thomas, and he's also a former member of parliament in Ottawa, Joe Preston. Joe, it's great to have you on Toronto Today. Thanks very much for making the time.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. This has to be a great feeling. Yesterday is the announcement, but as you know, and you know politics well, you probably were getting wind of this, hearing about it, hoping this would come to fruition. When did this first sort of come across your radar or land on your desk?
At least a year ago, mm-hmm. St. Thomas started accumulating the land and looking for a partner. Certainly the provincial government has been over the top helpful in helping this to happen. But look, this isn't just great for St. Thomas. It's for all of Ontario. Certainly the region in southern Ontario where the plant will be located is going to benefit hugely. But with the ingredients for battery factories being available in all of Ontario, including northern Ontario, we are especially happy for the whole province.
And I know, look, you know how I would argue we have sometimes we think, well, politics, it's all partisan and everybody fights all the time and everybody disagrees. I think this also shows your municipal government. I'm sure London's in the mix, but also Ontario's premier and Canada's prime minister are working very much in tandem and hand in hand on these kind of big time infrastructure announcements.
Well, and I agree. I think politics is better done as friendship rather than partisanship. And my time in Ottawa and as the mayor of St. Thomas certainly is showing proof of that, that if you can make more friends, you get more done.
How many jobs do you think we can create from a plant like this?
Well, you know, it starts off with just this plant being the largest automotive investment in Canadian history. That in itself is huge. But as you know, each of these large industrial facilities create so many other spin-off jobs too. We're not even, you know, we're going to let Volkswagen share with us what they think the job count will be in that facility alone. But we know that in the area now, this will mean thousands, if thousands more.
So some of this, Joe, is building the plant. When would shovels go in the ground for the plant? When do you think the plant would be operational in a best case scenario?
2027 is the date that Volkswagen wants this up and operating. And I'll tell you, we're clearing land already. So we were preparing a site for whoever was able to come here and purchase, and Volkswagen has now said yes, and we've already started making it work.
I also think these aren't just any jobs. You know, you see it and we get jobs reports, and the concept is, well, the workers got a lot of a lot of leverage and incentive right now. But a lot of these jobs aren't full time. They're not salaried. You don't have a great benefit package. You can't retire off those jobs. Jobs like the ones Volkswagen's going to create, I think you can. We're getting back to, I know Southern, I was a London kid, so I know there was a big plant in Ingersoll, big plant in Tillsonburg, and we were building cars in those areas there as well. Those are careers almost as opposed to jobs. That's the hope here with this plant.
Yeah, the announcement yesterday solidified St. Thomas and the region's future for decades to come. These are that kind of jobs. And so we were, you know, it's been a lot of work to get to the point we're at. It's three or four more years of heavy lifting to get the plant up and running. But these are the projects you work hard to do.
Tell me a little bit about the land and where the plant's going to go. I don't know how many listeners will have a great knowledge of St. Thomas's geography, but do you have to, is any of this farmland? Is any of this just vacant land? Where would the plant go, and what kind of what kind of signatures do you need to sign off on to make sure you've got all the space you need?
Well, we have accumulated 1,500 acres. It's an extremely large site because this is an extremely large endeavor. In the northeast portion of St. Thomas, where our industrial park was, where we already have servicing for a factory of this size, we've added the land to that square and are already accumulated, ready to go.
It is great to have you on because you have this lens and you've been in politics so long. I'm sure you hear from constituents in St. Thomas, and I'm sure your local MPP and MP will as well. And they'll say, I'm not sure about electric cars, or they're conversations you just have going for breakfast or for lunch. I like my pickup truck. I like putting gas in the truck. I think there may always be a place to some extent, to a slight extent, for fossil fuels. But how do we get most of us? I don't own an electric car yet. How do we get most of us to make this conversion and decide that this is the way we need to go?
Well, I mean, I think we're well on the road there. Volkswagen's just made an announcement yesterday that is bigger than has ever been made. I think we have to create the demand or create the usage of electric vehicles by having great companies like Volkswagen building them and building them locally, and we'll see people flock to them. I think that's the idea. If the old build it and they will come scenario, I think most people agree it's a great way to go. Now, where can I get it? How can I get it? How How much different would it be than my old vehicle? These are all great questions, and we just solved a lot of them yesterday.
How important is it for the province to give more of a, just that financial nudge? BC, Quebec, many other provinces are still giving these incentives for buying new electric vehicles. And as you know, Ontario dropped theirs after 2018. How important is it to just give people that extra push?
Well, I think the province of Ontario in its role in this shows us that perhaps the right thing is to get the jobs to go with automobiles and push that as much as it is anything else to get people into electric cars.
Mm. By the way, massive St. Thomas fan. My kids were Thomas the Tank Engine obsessed kids. So when I think about St. Thomas, I think of three straight summers where we came to see Thomas and the big festival. Like, honestly, one of the great parenting moments of my existence was coming and bringing my kids to that. Seriously.
Well, thank you for saying so. We have a lot to offer here, and it's a great area of the country. And now it's got its future secured for it.
Yeah. And you just, in the summer, as you know, you might just see Joe Thorne wandering by or in the foursome ahead of you at the golf course. You just never know. The beard is easy to recognize.
Yeah. Look, we're pretty proud of our community. We have a hashtag St. Thomas Proud is one of our symbols. We really, truly are. But I'll tell you, we're walking around with great big smiles on our faces and quite proud today.
I think it's a great thing. I think it's a wonderful thing. And we wanted to have you on to be able to share it. And I can hear it in your voice. Let's stay in touch on the project. Joe, really appreciate you coming on here in Toronto.
Sure. Anytime.
Okay. Joe Preston is the mayor of St. Thomas. That's big, big news for that community and Ontario wide as well.
This is Toronto Today with Greg Brady.
Toronto's news. Today's talk.
640 Toronto.
So we've got a by-election in our province on Thursday, and this is in Hamilton Centre, Andrea Horvath's riding. Now, the NDP went to power in 1990. David Christofferson won two straight elections. He even won when Mike Harris swept to power in 1995. And then Andrea Horvath won five straight elections. Bottom line, this has been an NDP stronghold. Seven straight elections, 33 years. Our next guest is hoping to change that. She is running for the Ontario Liberal Party, hoping to become the ninth MPP for the Liberals. She is Deirdre Pike. Deirdre, it's great to have you on. Thanks very much for making the time.
Oh, good morning. Thanks very much for having me.
Of course, you're 2 days away. How are you feeling about your campaign? How are you feeling about your chances?
Terrific, really. You know, I'm just having a great time at the doors. I'm really feeling the energy and the momentum from people who really envision a change for this riding. Yeah, looking for a voice that can bring their concerns forward and who has decades of experience working on the issues that matter.
What are some of the biggest issues when you come to, I guess I'd call them kitchen table issues. Maybe they're issues even the media doesn't talk about enough. What do you hear from voters that say, this is what I need changed that makes a difference for me, my family, my partner? What do you hear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what's interesting is that people here at the doors, you know, which is basically their kitchen table when I show up, and sometimes they invite me in actually, but the conversations are about the needs of their neighbors. And that is what really energizes me, because my work in Hamilton has largely been about that for 30 years. I've worked at community-based agencies to highlight issues of concern. So the main one I'd say here has been about, having to face the reality that so many of our neighbors have no roofs over their heads. We have so many unhoused people in this community. And what I hear at the door is, this is not acceptable. I want to see something change here. What can you do? So, the fact is, compassionate hearts are what really compel people in this riding. And, I'm able to take those, not just those hearts, but the head as well, because of my experience here. So, yeah, that's what we're talking about, the lives of our neighbors.
Deirdre Pike is kind enough to join us, Liberal candidate for Hamilton Centre. That by-election is on Thursday. I'm so glad you bring that lens to it, because I'm sure some people outside of Toronto would say, well, Toronto talks a lot about these issues and the homeless problem in Toronto and people experiencing homelessness. But you see it there. My hometown's in London. I see it there. When I take my kid on a soccer trip, we went to Sudbury, huge homeless encampment in the park. I don't ever think I've seen anything quite like this. And we've got to turn it in a different direction here.
Absolutely. And, you know, London is my home as well. Strathroy, really. But, you know, in London, they've had some really great conversations cross party, cross sector, just recently around housing and homelessness. We need those conversations here. We've had them. I've convened many of them. But we need to be a little bit more intentional about working across party, across in Hamilton, we have a group that works across, really their funding divides, I'd say. I mean, these mm-hmm. are social housing service providers. They have a thing called Hamilton is Home. They get together and say, what is best for this city? And I envision those same kinds of conversations, you know, with my counterpart, the NDP MPP in the neighboring riding and so on, PC on the mountain, you know, whoever we are, we have to bring the question forward. What is best for the people in Hamilton? And that's what I intend to start every conversation with. What can we do for the people in Hamilton Center?
It's been documented you were an NDP supporter. And as things change and evolve and ebb and flow, you cross to the Liberals. And you're very inspired by former Premier Kathleen Wynne. Give us a sense as to why that was and why you thought that's more who I am at my roots politically than where I was previously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was in London, the first person that ever came to my door was an NDP candidate. And at the time, you know, like I've heard many people in Hamilton say, it just became sort of a de facto reflex. Mm-hmm. That's where I go without necessarily diving into, to think about these issues a little more deeply. And I showed up at Premier Kathleen Wynne's office in 2017 with a report on rural poverty, actually with it co-authored by a professor at King's College in London. And, in that conversation, I started by telling the premier that I was it was NDP, but I was really seeing great progress in the policies coming forward, particularly basic income. And although I've been described as a reluctant convert to that, in the conversation with Kathleen, it became clear that when you address these issues pragmatically, when you are open to hearing people that from the outset seem to maybe disagree with you or seem to be pushing you further, it's okay to engage in those conversations in a way that changes the direction. And that's what I saw. Our 20-minute meeting went to an hour and 20 minutes. And my report got better because of the recommendations, some of the recommendations that came from that, the premier's table.
So
I left that meeting just a changed person, thinking about how different lives could be in Hamilton, in Ontario, with that basic income, with a government that's compassionate and caring. And I knew my direction was to be part of that.
That's so interesting. Yeah. That's to have that meeting and have it change you. Now, you're well aware your rival in the race, NDP candidate Sarah Jama, there's been accusations of anti-Semitism. Those are hard things to fight or talk away from, but those also don't stem out of nowhere. Where does it stand for you right now? You've sort of seen the file. You've probably seen some of the videos. Is this a person that's qualified to go to Queen's Park, or do they have hateful views towards Jewish people?
I think that, it's up to the voters, of course, to decide if that's the an appropriate voice for Queen's Park for them. And I have simply, it's been raised by community members, but now also, of course, B'nai B'rith and other voices. And it's not to be ignored, that's for sure. And to be a member of Parliament means having difficult conversations at times when you least expect it. And I thought we'd be debating, current provincial policies like I've just spoken about. But the reality is these are very grave concerns that people have brought forward. And, I offered an opportunity at our local debate the NDP candidate to address them and offer, words of apology or, clear the air for are the constituents in Hamilton that, you know, we need to be capable of representing everyone. And I certainly am. And so this is the time for Hamiltonians and Hamilton Center mm-hmm. residents to recognize which voice is most appropriate in terms of being able to represent all people. And I think that they'll be able to see that clearly when they hear me and see what I stand for.
Deirdre, I wish you luck on Thursday. It's nice to make your acquaintance, and I hope win or lose, I wish you the best, but I hope we get to chat again. I think you've got an important voice, and I'd love to talk to you more. Thanks so much for this, and good luck on Thursday.
Thank you so much for making time. It's been a pleasure.
You bet. Deirdre Pike is running for the Ontario Liberal Party in Hamilton Center. Again, the NDP's won 7 straight elections there. This could easily change on Thursday night. There's a lot of smoke around the NDP candidate here based on places she's been, things she said, and it's picked up. It hasn't dropped off.
This is Toronto Today with Greg Brady.
Toronto's news, today's talk.
640 Toronto.
Are you in or out?
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
So are we in or out? You're out. You are over and out.
No. Insulted him a little bit.
I'm okay with it, but now you're making me feel weird about it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Okay, our in or out. Yesterday, we talked about daylight savings time. We all ended up on the same side of things, given we wanted earlier sunrises. So we like actually the change. We've all gotten pretty used to it now. Vince Tedesco's in for Sheba Siddiqui this week. You're not having trouble waking up?
Trouble waking up? No. Trouble going to sleep? Sometimes.
You do? At night?
Every once in a while.
What time would you have fallen asleep last night? What does the data tell us?
Depressing Leaf game probably killed it by about 10 p.m.
Oh, how depressing could it be? They're gonna the depressing Leaf games come in mid-April, Vince. Don't you know that? Gord knows this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I put my flag up, and 2 weeks later, down it comes.
You're going to try and beat Vasilevsky in 4 games with Matt Murray at the other end? Best of luck to you. No. That's depressing.
I'm already practicing. There's always next year.
You've been doing it for quite some time. But our debate today comes from viral video of two guys. We had a long debate about this in the household last night. And they free a trapped wolf from a fence. Now, the video, it's tough to describe, Vince, but the wolf is, in essence, upside down, stuck on the fence, either in some wire, and it looks like a guy goes and gets some clippers to free the wolf and let him free. Like, the wolf stuck on the fences. How else would you describe it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the wolf, that's the first thing that happened, that, like, the thought that came through my mind is, was he trying to jump over the fence
right.
and got his back leg stuck on it? Because he's clearly on one side, but, yeah.
I don't know how he did it. Exactly. I don't know how his paw,
it's
hoof,
a conundrum.
It's paw, yeah.
Hoof? Got stuck on, like, the top rung of what looks like sort of a wire, like a chicken wire, barbed wire fence. Here's some audio. I don't think these guys were hunters. I think they were just driving by on the road.
That's what it looked like to me, yeah.
So here's some odd, basically the in or out is, would you free a trapped wolf? And I think it's the most important question of a slow news warning. Here's the audio of it.
I don't think so either. He's begging for release right now.
Is that wire right into his foot, right?
Yeah. We're trying to help, bud. We're trying to help. Yeah.
I try and pull it out.
Yeah.
He's not bothering you, Rick.
There you go.
Okay. So what we would debate is they got the wolf free and the wolf ran across the road because it would have had to then jump over the fence to get after them.
Yeah.
So our in or out is, are you in on freeing the wolf or would you think, I'm going to free this guy? He's 145 pounds of lean, mean fighting machine, and he's going to thank me by leaping at my esophagus and murdering me. That would be my biggest fear. Vince, are you in or out? Would you save the wolf?
Being that there's a fence dividing us, I probably would. That's my... Now, if you ever seen the video, the fence is not the most sturdy of fences.
It's not the sturdiest.
No.
Gord, would you save the wolf?
Yes. I wouldn't even
really.
Think about it. I'd be more like the guy in the video that does it. He has his right foot pointing away, but he's leaning in to help the wolf. So he's kind of hedging his bets. He's on the fence. He's saving the wolf.
He's figuratively. But right. He's figuratively on the fence.
Yeah. I think the wolf knows instinctively that if you would have killed him to eat him, you would have done it already. Because he was in such a vulnerable position. So
yeah, but how often, 416-870-6400, would you save a wolf that had its paw stuck in a fence? I would, but I think Vince's point is made. The caveat and the asterisk for me is that the wolf is on the other side of the fence. But he can get over that fence. I think that thing can leap 6 feet in the air.
Clearly.
And again, leap right at your... Did you guys ever see Teen Wolf? Like Michael J. Fox turns into a from a bad basketball player, and all of a sudden he turns into like Dominique Wilkins.
I don't know why you're worried about him leaping over the fence. He couldn't do it the first time.
Yeah, but
stuck.
That just might have been. He might have been distracted, thinking about something else. He's got other stuff to do. But that's the other thing. Gord, Vince, here's where I'm skeptical about Gord's perspective, is he's giving the wolf human mental characteristics. Like, you know what? Those guys did a really nice thing for me. Like, they don't rub their chin and go, you know what? I'm going to spare you this time. I don't know if they do that. They're just, there's my meal.
They get
it's right
scared.
There.
They get
what a
scared.
Sucker. He freed me.
It's not, I'm not putting a suit and tie on the wolf. I'm just giving
that would
him
be interesting.
Instincts. He's scared and he just wants to get out of there.
That Listen, makes the story
wolves,
better.
If wolves can smell fear and they can certainly
that's it also.
You.
Thank you. They can smell fear. They know they're on the other side of the fence. And this was not, this was not a baby wolf. This was not, I'll give an example. We saw two coyotes. There's coyotes everywhere, right?
Yes.
Right now. And we saw two right on our fence line. We don't have a dog, but sometimes we let our cat out, sit out in the backyard with us in the spring or summer. Not now, but I'm telling you, like, if he was out even for 5 minutes on his own, I think those coyotes come under the fence. There's a little hole. They would burst right through. And that cat is like a bite-sized brownie. Even though he's 19 pounds, that is like
two bites.
Chop, chop.
Yep.
That's
done.
It.
Yeah.
So why would a wolf be any different when it comes to... I don't think wolves are going to be thankful or grateful that these dudes saved them.
No, but he's not like Duran Duran says. He's not on the hunt. He's not after you.
You don't know that. You don't know the last time he ate.
He wants to get away.
I'm
not
sure.
That could be why he was caught in the first place. He was on the hunt and he got trapped in the fence.
So you're going to leave it there to die. You're just going to leave it there to die or something else to eat it.
I'll give you another movie. Jack Nicholson in the movie Wolf hits a wolf in his car. He's kind of a meager guy at the office. I know it's Jack Nicholson. That's weird. I think he's working for James Spader. I saw this movie in the theater with Michelle Pfeiffer. And he hits a wolf. And tries to get the wolf off the road, but then the wolf bites him. But then he all of a sudden gets, like, wolf powers. It's amazing this wasn't nominated for 9 Academy Awards.
So you're...
This is better than One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, The Departed, any of Nicholson's best work. Terms of Endearment, this is amazing. And then suddenly he can leap in the air. He gets a promotion at work because he's a little more aggressive.
Yeah.
But he ends up with a lot of extra hair in places where he doesn't
That's
want
right.
it. So there's you need some kind of.
Does he ever get caught in a fence?
No. No.
But you're accusing me of
And he's great. And I'm going to say this. He's great in bed with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Wow.
Post-Wolf.
Yeah.
Transformation.
Yeah.
So they, all of a sudden they start dating. She's like the daughter of the guy that owns the giant company or whatever. But I'm saying that if you got bit by a wolf, that could potentially, like, that's, so maybe it's
that
not always
that's
negative.
That's a pro.
Yeah.
But as opposed to your cons.
I'm just, don't you think you'd feel differently freeing a wolf or on the side of the road? If you hit a wolf in your car, 90% of people listening, no one wants to admit it to us, but you would just keep driving. You really wouldn't come back and check on the wolf's vital signs because that thing's going to wake up and go, you fast driving maniac, and it's going to attack you.
You think it's going to attack you, even though it's in serious pain?
Did you just not hear the Jack Nicholson story?
That's you're a good point, accusing
Vince.
Me of putting
it's not a documentary, though, Vince.
Okay, well.
Onto a wolf, but yet you're citing movies as your
I have done that twice.
Evidence. Detailed.
Somewhat based on reality.
The Wikipedia page for Wolf describes it as a romantic horror film. Will Randall is bitten by a black wolf. He accidentally struck while driving home in Vermont. But then, he starts biting. He bites his boss, Stewart, played by James Spader, a little bit later on. Once that starts to happening,
I'd bite him too.
Yeah,
but then
HR is involved.
Yeah,
There's a whole bunch of issues if you're biting colleagues.
That's right.
I think at the office, but then he gets a promotion out of this. The workplace was just different in the 1990s. All right, we got a few texts in already. Would you free a wolf? I can't promise as intriguing a question tomorrow on In or Out. On Toronto Today. Would you free a wolf that was stuck in a fence? Now, you know whose answer we need. Not that we need a tie to be broken here. Is that of Dave Bradley's. Wolf's hanging upside down. You got two guys with you. You pull off the side of the road. You're like, what is that? And it's a wolf basically stuck with its paw in a chicken wire fence, would you free that wolf?
Oh, absolutely.
You would?
Yeah. Don't you remember the fable where the mouse pulls the thorn from the paw of the lion? Right. I mean, if you show it kindness, it's going to be your friend, right? Yeah.
But was that lion talking? Because lions don't talk. Was this like
it may have been talking, and it may have been a cartoon children's book. But
is this like Madagascar?
did the lion sound like James Earl Jones?
Or Jack Nicholson?
Yeah. Yeah. Why didn't this guy just hold up walk to the top of the hill and hold the wolf up in the air like Simba? Like, why didn't that happen?
I think the wolf is going to be petrified of you once you do free it. It'll run away.
See? I don't know. Why are we closing recesses for coyotes and everything? Like, if the coyotes are afraid of people.
They just bite you.
That's not a good recess to get bitten by a coyote. If you're a guy, you don't want to get de-pants during recess, and you don't want to get bitten by a coyote.
Yeah, two things want to try to avoid today.
Avoid them both.
Yeah.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.